Welcome to the Agency of the Month, Veterans Affairs, sponsored by Battelle. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
When he was still a candidate for president, Donald Trump promised to improve care for the nation's veterans. Now, veterans groups are calling for an 8.3% increase in medical funding for the Veterans Health Administration and a 10% overall increase for VA next year. Joining me with details of that recommendation, Carlos Fuentes, Legislative Director for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Mr. Fuentes, good to have you on.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
So this recommendation came from you and a couple of other groups, the Disabled American Veterans being one of them, and also the Paralyzed Veterans of America. Tell us what it is you're looking for in VA funding.
So for the last 30 years, the VFW has partnered with PVA and DAV to essentially make recommendations on what stakeholders, as the veterans community, we believe is necessary for VA to really carry out its mission. This includes proper funding for VA healthcare and construction, IT, medical research, and a number of other appropriations accounts.
Do you feel that the department right now has sufficient frontline people, doctors, nurses, medical center directors, physicians, assistants, those kind of people that actually come in contact daily with the veterans?
Not at all. It's actually a common recommendation that we receive from our members. VFW has conducted a number of surveys on VA healthcare experience over the past 2 years. And the number one recommendation that we receive from our members when asked how to improve VA healthcare is hire more docs. We fully believe that VA has been under-resourced for quite some time, which has led to increase in wait times and such.
Well, do you think that increases in funding for the Veterans Choice Program and expansion of that so that veterans can get care for many routine matters outside of VA could alleviate the VA direct problem?
And it has. So the $10 billion influx that came along with the Choice Program certainly has alleviated a lot of that pressure or demand, built-up demand in the system. However, the Choice Program is great, but the private sector is not always the answer. We have to take a look at where VA needs to increase staff. It needs to do it in a smart way so it's not replicating what's available in the private sector. But, simply purchasing care is not always the answer.
And one of the recommendations you have is a big increase in construction because many of the VA hospitals are aging. And I guess at some point, hospitals get so old, it's better to tear them down and build new than it is to try to renovate. And what do you make of the fact that VA has lost so much money in that Aurora Showpiece Hospital in Colorado? That they've spent enough to build two hospitals so far, and it's not finished.
You're absolutely correct. Aurora is really the reason that VA has not been able to receive the appropriate major construction funding, especially this past year. They requested $1.5 billion and only received $500 million, and that's really due to cost overruns and mismanagement in Aurora. But we're working with VA to improve their construction process to make sure that buildings are delivered on time and on budget.
Because one recommendation I think the GAO is contemplating is maybe VA should adopt a template for hospitals, even though they might look all alike, but they could get them built much more efficiently if they had something like that.
That's certainly correct. One of our other recommendations is just reforming the way that process works. So you have the folks who design the project, the folks who are actually going to build it, working together from the very beginning. And that's one of the issues that VA ran into in Aurora, where the design was not very feasible, and when construction began, a lot of changes needed to occur.
Carlos Fuentes is Legislative Director for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. I'm Tom Temin.
This is the sound of healthcare saving lives. But now healthcare needs help. Patient visits, costs, and paperwork are all spiraling. This is the sound of a team of technologists and engineers at Battelle studying big data, making healthcare healthier, improving patient outcomes. With Battelle, it can be done. Learn more at battelle.org/outcomes.
We're speaking with Carlos Fuentes, Legislative Director for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And I wanted to ask you about, in general, the care that veterans get at VA. Some of the requirements perhaps have changed from veterans of recent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan versus those from the Gulf War era and the Vietnam era. As a group, do you feel that VA has kept up with the changes in what the veterans' specific needs are?
Yes. It's actually one of the reasons that veterans turn to VA. When we ask them, they say VA delivers high quality care. It knows how to care for veterans, and it's an earned benefit. You know, we have seen that the newer generation of veterans turn to VA more frequently or higher percentages than previous generations and with more disabilities. So VA is certainly doing its best to adjust. Certainly has a way to go to make sure that it is welcoming to the new generation of veterans, including women veterans, which is the highest or the biggest growing cohort of the veterans population.
Because there have been reports that women's care specifically is not, or at least in some instances, has really not been very good in terms of the unique requirements of female patients.
That's correct. And adjusting to the gender-specific needs of women veterans has been a challenge for VA. Not all VA medical facilities have gender-specific care when it comes to OBGYN, but also in other clinics. For example, we've received complaints from folks, from female veterans saying that, you know, the orthotic clinic doesn't have, you know, the prosthetics that they need. For example, they only have male shoes and they don't have, you know, female-friendly shoes and things like that. Which VA is now tracking, you know, and we've been working closely with Kayla Williams from the Center of Women Veterans to make sure that VA adjusts and addresses a lot of those concerns.
And on the IT issue, you mentioned that you are looking for an increase in IT spending, and the scheduling system that is one of VA's signature systems that needs to be modernized has been kind of slow in coming. What would you like them to do, and what kind of money do you see them needing in information technology?
We were glad to see that Dr. Shulkin in the recent hearing announced that or agrees that VA cannot really keep up with the private sector when it comes to technological advances. So really turning to what's called COTS, off-the-shelf systems, when necessary is certainly the right approach, and that's what we believe VA needs to do with the scheduling system, which is archaic and needs to be updated. But also it's you know, electronic healthcare record.
Because the Department of Defense went with a commercial system, which they're starting to roll out for electronic health records, and VA keeps seeming to push for its own homegrown. Would you like to see VA switch to something like DOD has?
Absolutely. You know, VISTA was, you know, groundbreaking when it first came out, and certainly commend VA for being able to continue to update it and perform at a high level, but you know, it's time, as the Secretary said, you know, to really turn to the private industry and lean on their expertise, because VA, frankly, cannot keep up with advances in technology, and neither should it be required to.
And in this heightened political sensitivity season that we seem to be in, with everybody shouting at everyone, what kind of reception are you getting from the Veterans Affairs Committees for this budget proposal, this year's version? And what are you hearing, if anything, from the White House?
So I think everyone understands that VA will need to receive an increase this year. The advanced appropriations for fiscal year 18 are woefully under, you know, estimated. And that's due to sequestration and budget cuts, which we fully believe need to be eliminated. But, you know, the administration and VA and Congress have, you know, been receptive to our suggestions. And we're looking forward to working with them moving forward. We're very optimistic that the president's budget will also increase or include an increase in VA's budget as well.
Is there anything that VA is doing that you feel they could stop doing to save money?
There's always waste, fraud, and abuse that needs to be eliminated. We certainly want to work with them to identify that. Overall, though, we see the demand for healthcare continue to increase. We also see that the choice program is due to expire this year, and that demand that's been met through the choice program is not going to go away. If anything, it will continue to increase. There is ways to find and offset some of the spending, but ultimately, as demand continues to increase, the budget should follow. And unfortunately, it hasn't in the past.
Carlos Fuentes is Legislative Director for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me, Tom.
Find a link to the budget recommendations and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
This is the sound of healthcare saving lives. But now healthcare needs help. Patient visits, costs, and paperwork are all spiraling. This is the sound of a team of technologists and engineers at Battelle studying big data, making healthcare healthier, improving patient outcomes. With Battelle, it can be done. Learn more at battelle.org/outcomes.
The White House and the pyramids might stand for hundreds or thousands of years, but most buildings outlive their usefulness and get torn down. That's about to happen to five buildings on the Walter Reed Bethesda campus. Joining me with details of where and when the wrecking ball will hit, Army Colonel Anthony Metter, Assistant Chief of Staff at Walter Reed. Colonel Metter, good to have you on.
Hey, good morning, sir. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, what's going on there? I'm looking at the map of the big campus in Bethesda, and there are a lot of buildings there. I had no idea how big it was. I guess you have to see it from the air almost. But what are you doing?
Well, we've got a lot of great things that are about to take place, and some of which have already begun here on the campus to prepare us for the next few years of construction here at Walter Reed. But currently what's going on, we are setting the conditions for what will be a pretty substantial rebuild of close to a third of the existing hospital. We are currently working on an infrastructure tunnel, which will help with both enhanced communications and other electrical needs of a new facility. And we're also getting ready to put in a new temporary facility, which will begin or at least be in place at least by December of this year. And this temporary facility will help us in that when we demolish, again, almost a third of the facility, we have in place already the great capabilities that we bring to our patients and families. So we've got a lot of great new things that are going to take place over the next few years.
And before we get into the details, I have to ask the question, will it affect the traffic on Rockville?
Currently, we don't foresee that. Now, when the construction begins, we're really working with our Navy base counterparts to allow ease of access to the base. This also includes not only for family members and patients, but for those construction agencies who will be on the base. It's a very important thing to keep in mind because we do acknowledge that where we exist, it's a busy area, and we do take into account any aspects of our construction, what impact it may or may not have with the local area.
And what is the principal reason driving this reconstruction, this tear down and rebuild?
Well, what we have now, as you know, the facility, which was designed originally by FDR, he actually penciled the design of the facility on a napkin, which we have here at the facility. But we have somewhat in other areas a bit of an aging infrastructure that in order to bring in the newest techniques, innovations, it's easier and more appropriate for our patients to do that with a brand new facility where any of our buildings that are currently under the Federal Registry, you know, of course, are not touched, and we don't want to do that. But areas in the vicinity, we've taken into account not only age, but what we can do better for our patients and families to you know, demolish and rebuild in place and enhance some of those capabilities.
It seems like hospitals have a more definitive life cycle than, say, other types of buildings.
You're absolutely right. We look at recapitalization. Depending on which medical health systems you're in, recapitalization happens anywhere from 4 to 6 years. And what the facilities we're looking at replacing were built anywhere between 1945 and 1960.
And looking at the structures, the tower that's so familiar on Rockville Pike, that you're going to leave.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the tower belongs under the Federal Registry of Historical Places. And it is the heart and the picture. Anytime you think of Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, the tower comes to mind. And no, that will absolutely stay in place.
So this is all going to take place in the zone directly behind that, I guess.
That's
still
correct.
Up close front, but not the tower itself.
Absolutely.
Does the Army Corps of Engineers do the construction?
It'll be a lot of shared construction agencies that will be here on the base. Our Navy Facilities Command will be in charge of advising, pursuing various contractors to come on and actually do the construction. That may involve some Army Corps of Engineers agencies. At this point in time, cannot tell right exactly which agencies will be coming on, but they will certainly be a part of the process.
We're speaking with Army Colonel Anthony Metter, Assistant Chief of Staff at the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Bethesda. What's your timeline for all of this?
Well, we've currently begun construction phases already. Some of our staff and our patients have seen it already, where we're putting in an infrastructure tunnel. We expect this tunnel to be completed late spring of this year. Towards the end of this year, 2017, we anticipate our temporary facilities to be somewhat in place. At least they'll be erected, and we'll be going through some final stages of, you know, our IT infrastructure, making sure they're ready for patients and staff members. But we expect, you know, in between 2020 and 2022, really to see some of the aspects of demolition and, of course, rebuild.
And what are some of the new capabilities in a hospital, especially for active duty members of the military, that are required in this day and age?
Absolutely. We're very excited about that. We've got a lot of great aspects coming into our facility, enhanced, new. We're excited about a new women's health center. We will have a new Wounded Warrior Medical Home. We're also looking forward to some enhanced, up-to-date, family-centered medical and surgical inpatient bedrooms. Just to name a couple more, a new comprehensive eye exam and vision center, and also an enhanced pain block center for pain control.
When this is all done, what kind of capacity difference will there be? That is to say, will the temporary facility go away at that point?
It will. And what you currently see today is one of our parking lots, and we're going to take that parking lot and use it for the temporary facilities. And we're able to expand or relocate some of the parking here on the base. You might have also noticed a new parking garage being erected here on the base, which we expect to open late April, maybe early May of this year, which will help also with some of our parking on the base.
It's the shape of a baseball diamond.
Oh, does it look from overhead?
Yeah, from the map anyway, yeah. Because I see you do have a baseball field, looks like one, way
right
out near Perimeter Road.
Right.
All right. I guess people know that this has been here for so many years and that it did merge with what was in Silver Spring earlier. But give us a sense of the capacity. How many people are being cared for at a given time at the Bethesda Center?
Yeah, we have a great expanse. We treat a good number of service members. And what I'd like to point out is we treat all services. Because when Walter Reed Army and National Navy Bethesda combined, we became the Department of Defense's leading joint facility. But currently, we treat over 1 million, or at least we have over 1 million patient encounters each year. And what we are truly gaining with this new facility are up-to-date, enhanced medical facilities, with whether it's an outpatient clinic or inpatient rooms.
And what are the criteria by which a given member of the military is assigned to a given medical center? Because there are others around the world besides Walter Reed.
Absolutely. I'll tell you a couple where we have a lot of capabilities here, because Walter Reed remains the Department of Defense's only transplant-capable center. So that, of course, attracts various members of our military and beneficiaries to come to Walter Reed. Additionally, it is our rehabilitative center for all of our wounded warriors, coming from all services from around the world, come here for, again, all their rehabilitative care post-surgical. We do have a world-renowned Mirtha Cancer Center here as well.
And during this construction phase, when there's a temporary hospital, where will the president go for his annual checkup?
Yeah, we anticipate and we see no change at all with where the president will come for his treatment.
Army Colonel Anthony Metter is Assistant Chief of Staff at the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hey, thank you, sir. I appreciate the opportunity.
You can read more and find a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency of the Month, Veterans Affairs, sponsored by Battelle, on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month.